here the train goes out, starts on time. I always quote Rabbi Joseph Breuers, the front of the bracha, who was a grandson of Shamshon Falhirsch from the Breuers community of Washington Heights, and he said in his language, "Frei ist auch nicht pünktlich." Early is also not on time. I mean, you have to be a thoroughbred yekka to really appreciate that. And I remember my father-in-law, Olav Shalom, was a thoroughbred yekka from Frankfurt, turned 75, so we bought him the sefer called Minhag Frankfurt. I mean, it's a fat book of minhagim that nobody in the world has except the Frankfurt Jewish community. So we told him, when we presented it to him at an occasion, that at Har Sinai, the Frankfurt community stuck around for another 10 minutes to get the Minhag Frankfurt. So he said, it's not true. They came 10 minutes before Har Sinai. They weren't there at the end. I mean, if you're already getting into ethnic Har Sinai stories, so they say that there were three groupings at Har Sinai. There was the Yekis, and there were the Litvaks, and there were the Chassidim. So the Yekis came early, so they only got the preamble of the Torah. The Litvaks came on, the Litvaks, they were there for the Matan Torah. They received the meat of the Torah, and the Chassidim came for the Egel. You have to be a real misnagged Litvak to fully appreciate that. I say that, you know, coming from Hasidic stock, so I can get away with it. Okay, this morning's shir, I'm just going to wait because I'm sure Elaine Pomerantz is going to be here, so I'll repeat it again, but today's shir is dedicated by Elaine in memory of her mother, Clara Pomerantz, Chana Bat Shlomi and Esther, Zichronam Livracha, and she'll be here. I'll repeat it again when she gets here. Dealing with the rendezvous of science and Torah, so what could be a more obvious connection than the world of medicine? And who could be a more obvious personality to deal with this than the Rambam? Now, Rav Moshe ben Maimon, most probably one of the most incredible personalities after Moshe Rabbeinu. And that's not my assessment. This was already said by Klal Yisrael after the passing of the Rambam. One of the great Rambamistim, the Rambamist means the Rambam expert, of our generation, but unfortunately passed away at a young age just a few years ago, Professor Isidor Twersky, or Rav Yitzhak Twersky, Zichron Lebracha, the Rav's son-in-law, put out a monumental work on the Rambam in 1980 called Introduction to the Mishnah Torah of the Rambam. But he's written extensively on so many different other aspects of the Rambam. His last article that he published in his lifetime, he shows that the appreciation of the Rambam posthumously didn't take 100 years. Sometimes a person's fame grows as time goes on. There are reasons sometimes why that happens. It could be popularity of students, of books that he's written that finally have caught on. But it doesn't usually happen overnight after the passing of a great individual. But with the Rambam, the lauding of the Rambam immediately after his passing is immediate. And the phrase, Mi Moshe ad Moshe lo kam ke Moshe, is something that was said about the Rambam very, very shortly after his passing. From Moshe until Moshe, from Moshe Rabbeinu until Moshe ben Maimon, there was none as great as this Moshe. This phrase was used subsequently, and it lost a little bit of its power because you start misusing such a powerful... Now, I'm not saying it was misused, it's just that it didn't show up with the same intensity as Moshe Rabbeinu to Moshe ben Maimon. But when the Rama passed away, and it's on his tombstone in Warsaw, it says, Mi Moshe ad Moshe lo kam ke Moshe. And there it means from Moshe ben Maimon, from the Rambam until the Rama, there was no one as great as the Rama, Rabbi Jezalus. Fine, so that's where they used it. It was also used about Moshe Mendelssohn, by the way. Yeah. He also said, Mi Moshe ad Moshe. So there were different usages of Mimoshe Ad Moshe, Lo Kam Ki Moshe, but the first time it was about the Rambam, and it was from Moshe Rabbeinu until the Rambam. There was someone of a modern Talmud Chacham Gadol said that, trying to give some explanation, that you don't find the name Moshe used as a first name until from the days of the Chumash until the Rambam. It's not true. Because even though in the Mishnah and the Gemara we don't have any Rav Moshe, it's true. There are no Tanaim and Amoraim that we know of Rav Moshe, but there were Geonim in Bavel in the 7th, 8th, 9th century who did carry the name Moshe. So Rambam is not the first Moshe on the block since Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay? So you have to be careful sometimes before you make these dogmatic statements. Never first name Moshe until the Rambam. It's not true. You can catch somebody easily enough if you have access to the various sources. Now, the Rambam in his lifetime, which was either 66 or 69 years, because while we know his Yahrzeit, the 20th of Tevet, and it was the equivalent year of 1204, we are a little bit unclear as to the year of his birth. There is a... There is a letter that was left by his grandson, Rabbi David ben Avraham ben Rambam, who says that the Rambam, his grandfather, was born on Erev Pesach, which is the 14th of Nisan, and he gave a year, and the year was equivalent to 1135. In most history books, that's what's going to be the date. 1135 to 1204, that makes the Rambam 69 years old. There's only one problem, and that is the Rambam himself, at the end of his Mishnah commentary, signs off and tells us exactly what date he's at the date of the signing off, and it's equivalent to 1168, and he says, Vani ben Shloshim Shana, I'm 30 years old. You don't have to be an Einstein to know that if you're standing in 1168 and you're 30 years old, you weren't born in 1135, but you were born in 1138. And therefore, that would make him 66 years old if he did die in 1204. Rav Kapach Zatzal and other great Rambamistim of the current generation have accepted more what the Rambam said than a letter of his grandson. Because if you have to choose, you're going to probably look for the better source. And the better source is an autobiographical source than a report by a grandson where it could be off. It's interesting that Rav Professor Shaul Lieberman, Zechonon Livracha, thought that there was a mistake in the text of the Perish HaMishnah, of the Mishnah commentary, and it should read, Vani ben Shloshim Vishaloshana, that the word Vishalosh got dropped, and he's just locked into the date of 1135, so he figured that was probably what happened. The copyist forgot the word Vishalosh and just wrote Vani ben Shloshim. But the others, and I'm talking about people like Rav Yitzhak Shilat from Male Adumim, and other really great people who knew the Rambam very well in terms of the Arabic text and were familiar. Professor Havlin, my mentor at Bar Ilan, Shlomo Zalman Havlin, they were experts in manuscripts of the Rambam, that the Rambam was 30 years old in 1168, and that made him 66 years old at the end of his life, and so on. So we'll leave it at that. The Rambam, as a 66-year-old, wrote 40 books in his lifetime, where the Mishnah Torah that comes in 14 books is considered one. And that took him 10 years. According to Rambam's own testimony, it took him 10 years to write the Mishnah Torah. So, most of the books, by the way, are not even in the world of Torah. They're in the world of philosophy and medicine. Most of the books. But the books that we're familiar with are the Torah books. The Mishnah Torah, which is sometimes known affectionately as the Yad Chazakah, because of the Yud Dalet, is the Gematria 14, and the Sefer Mitzvot, which is the introduction to the Mishnah Torah, the Mishnah Commentary, the Moreh Nevuchim, Guide to the Perplexed, and the various letters that he wrote to various communities, mostly to Yemen. So these are the texts that we're familiar with, and the responsa literature we're familiar with as well. But if you talk about full-length books or compendiums, encyclopedias of medical information, this stuff the Rambam wrote all in Arabic, And they were of general use. The Rambam wrote many, many, many works that were extremely important. The first work that the Rambam ever wrote that today they use the modern word publish, of course there was no publishing houses then, that the Rambam, you know, goes public with. He's 16 years old, and it's a dictionary on logic. A dictionary on logic. It's called in Hebrew Milon HaHigayon. And I picked it up at the book fair once several years ago, and the book fair was right down the block in the next to the Inbal Hotel in the Liberty Park area. And I saw it there. It was a pamphlet. And it said, Milon Higayon, the Rambam. And they were selling it for 5 shekel. And I looked at the person and I said, that's not right. This book should go for a lot more than 5 shekel. This is the Rambam's first work. How can you sell it for 5 shekel? So they told me, you want to pay more? Hey, take two. You know, like... I bought it so I could have it on the shelf, just so I could say I have it also. The Milon HaHigayon. Well, let's see what the Rambam writes about medicine. Number one, in source number one, I mean, titled Torah Refuah B'Mishnato Shel Rambam, Torah and Medicine in the Rambam's Teachings, it comes from the last chapter of Kiddush HaChodesh, which is the astronomical section. And there, the Rambam promised in his Mishnah commentary early in the game, Elaine, I made the dedication, I'll repeat it, in memory of your mother, Clara, Aleha Shalom, Chana Bat Shlomo, and Esther. Aleha Shalom. Okay. How many years?
5 years.
Okay. The Rambam, in his Mishnah commentary to Masechet Rosh Hashanah and Masechet Sukkah, promises to write a book about all the astronomical background necessary to figure out the laws of sanctification of the new moon, Kiddush HaChodesh, when we had a Beit Din and witnesses would come. So the people in attendance at Beit Din would have to be astronomers. They have to know that what these people are testifying could astronomically be correct. And on that basis, these witnesses would be accepted. Yet the Rambam never writes the book, but he somehow, we use the phrase in Yiddish, he's yoitza, he fulfills his obligation by sticking it in as an appendix to the laws of Kiddush HaChodesh in the Mishnah Torah. And it's quite a few chapters. It's almost 10 chapters of astronomical calculations. Now, those who are familiar with the program that was set up by the Lubavitcher Rebbe, Zichron Livracha, to study 3 chapters a day of Mishnah Torah, and then you finish the Rambam in a year. So this is part of it. It's printed as part of Hilchot Kiddush HaChodesh. It goes to 19 chapters, and 10 of them are astronomy. So they read it, and so on. But not just they read it, but I'd go so far to say that if you're reading the Rambam's astronomical information, and you're not dealing with any halakha whatsoever, it's 10 chapters of astronomy, you must probably have to make a Birkat HaTorah in the morning. Not only because it's printed in the Mishnah Torah, because the Rambam was teaching us something here, that the scientific information that goes hand in hand with Torah somehow becomes imbued with Torah as well. It's not just that, listen, there's the halakha, there's a mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh, and we can deal with the sugya in Masechet Rosh Hashanah and the sugya in Masechet Sanhedrin about Ibu Hashanah, leap years. And now, in parenthesis, I'm just going to fill in some blanks here with some scientific background. The Rambam doesn't say that. He just continues as if you're just reading another section of halachot in the Rambam. But when you start getting into the material, you realize you're reading astronomy. But that's okay. That's okay. Just as the Rambam does in the beginning of Mishnah Torah, with cosmology, the proof of the existence of God, he uses cosmological argument. And to the Rambam, that becomes part of Torah, because you are in the service of a mitzvah. In the case of cosmology, in the service of Anokhi Hashem Elokecha. In terms of astronomy in Hilchot Kiddush HaChodesh, you're preparing yourself. It's at least a hechsher mitzvah in preparation of a mitzvah of HaChodesh Elohim, Rosh Chodeshim. So it's part of Torah, because you need this information. And we'll see in a few minutes that the Rambam will use scientific information to gain understanding in the laws of Kilayim, for example. You have to be a botanist. A botanist. And if you really want to understand trefot, what is an animal that's trefa in terms of perforated internal organs, you have to learn anatomy. And the Rambam doesn't say go to school and learn anatomy. He gives it to us in the Mishnah commentary, because the Rambam feels that he's got to give you a full presentation and not send you elsewhere. So this is what he says in source number one, Hilchot Kiddush HaChodesh. Hine biyarnu cheshbonot kol adrachim shetzrichim lahem. I've given you all the possible conceivable calculations that you would require b'yediat ha-re'iya u'b'chakirat ha-edim, to understand that there was indeed a visual sighting of the moon at the beginning of the month, and the interrogation of the witnesses who would come and testify that they indeed saw the moon. Kedei sheyeh hakol yadua lemevinim. So those who have brains should understand it. The Rambam is telling us, if you don't have brains, you're not going to understand this section anyway. But I figure there's some people out there with some brains, so I'm giving it to you. Even though the Rambam knows fully well in the 12th century, nobody is fulfilling that aspect of Kiddush HaChodesh by setting up a Beit Din and having Edim, witnesses, come and testify. He knows that. So why is he giving this all this information? One, the Rambam gives us the Torah, the Halakha, for all generations. Whether it's relevant in the 12th century or not is irrelevant. Everything is relevant when it comes to Torah. And the Rambam believes that Torah, in all its details, in terms of the mitzvah, the totality of the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, you can't skip things. And that's why in the Mishnah Torah he writes about everything. He spends as much intellectual energy in leprosy, in Negat Zerat, as he does in Chometz HaMatzah. I mean, Chometz HaMatzah said every year is Pesach. Negat Zerat, when was the last time you saw that? You heard it Dvar Torah in Parshas Metzora, fine. But you never saw it. So, but the Rambam, that's not an issue. The Rambam spends a tremendous amount of time. And then he says, "V'lo yechasru derech midarkei haTorah." So you should not be deficient in any area in the ways of Torah. "V'lo yishotetu levakesh achareha b'sfarim achirim." And I'm not interested that you should start swimming around and poking around in other books. The Rambam is nervous that if you can start going to the library, you're going to start finding books that maybe you shouldn't be reading. So therefore, I'm not going to send you to the library of sciences. I'm going to give you everything that's necessary. I'm just going to give you one example of something that the Rambam said in Kiddush HaChodesh that raised more than an eyebrow. We know that Rosh Hashanah cannot come out on a Sunday, Wednesday, or Friday. Lo Adu Rosh, Aleph Dalet Vav. Everyone will explain to you that this was a convenience orchestrated by Chazal. For what purpose? It says, Sof ma'aseh b'machshava t'chila. The end game is determined by what you do up front. We say it in the Lechadaydi. Sof ma'aseh b'machshava t'chila. Whether it refers to Shabbat, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had Shabbat in mind on day one of creation. Sof ma'aseh, but machshava t'chila, up front. Or it refers to the creation of man. Sof ma'aseh. Everything that happens on day 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 is to lead up to the creation of Adam. Either way, Sof Maaseh B'Machshavat Tchila, the Rambam says that with regard to Lo Adu, I'm sorry, the Chazal say Lo Adu Rosh, and we understand that's the way our calendar functions, because we don't want to have a scenario 10 days later that Yom Kippur comes out on a Friday, or Yom Kippur comes out on a Sunday. What's wrong with Yom Kippur on Friday or Sunday? So if there's a Yom Tov, like Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot, or even Rosh Hashanah next to a Shabbat, on Yom Tov you're allowed to cook. You're allowed to prepare food. Shabbat you're not allowed to cook, but Yom Tov you're allowed to cook. So you never have 48 hours, uninterrupted 48 hours, of prohibition of food preparation. But if Yom Kippur came out next to Shabbat, whether it's on Friday or on Sunday, you're going to have 48 hours where you cannot cook. And this could cause a problem. So if Rosh Hashanah does not come, if Rosh Hashanah would fall out on a Wednesday or a Friday, then Yom Kippur would fall out on Friday or Sunday. And that shouldn't be. So therefore, there's no Rosh Hashanah. There's no Rosh Hashanah on Wednesday or Friday. What about Sunday? Sunday, the concern was that Hoshana Rabbah shouldn't fall out on Shabbat. Hoshana Rabbah, because we don't take a lulav and etrog on Shabbat, but you have six other days, so you're not going to miss. But the idea of the minhag of taking the aravot is a one-shot deal. It's a Shana Rabbah. And for the same reason that we wouldn't take a Lulav and Etrog on Shabbat, we wouldn't take the Aravot on Shabbat either. So a Shana Rabbah would lose out. So therefore, to guarantee that a Shana Rabbah won't fall out on a Shabbat, don't make Rosh Hashanah on Sunday. So that's where the Aleph comes in, Adu. Aleph Dalet Vav. So, okay, fine. And then we understand that everybody's comfortable with this and happy with it and everything. So the Rambam comes along and he says, he makes a calculation that from the days of Sheshit Imei Breshit, from the days of creation, the first of Tishrei could never fall out on a Sunday, Wednesday, or Friday from an astronomical point of view. And what Chazal say, they say, that's just a, you know, for Balabatim, to give a little bit of a hezber, an explanation. But I'm telling you, it can never, ever happen from an astronomical point of view. Rabbi Avraham ben David, classically known as the Ravid, the various abbreviations, from South France, from Provence, he explodes. And he says, look, you know, I didn't go to school. You know, Rambam's got a PhD. You know, I didn't go to school, so I just know the Mishnayos. I just know what I learned in the Cheder, you know? And what I learned in the Cheder was that these things can't happen because they were designed that they shouldn't happen for a reason. But in theory, it could happen because there's even a Mishnah that even talks about the scenario of possibility of a Shana Rabbah on a Shabbat. So it could happen. So the Ravid really argues vehemently against the Rambam on this. There was another young contemporary of the Rambam in Spain. His name was Rav Meir Halevi Abulafia. And he writes a very important sefer on Masechet Sanhedrin. It's called Yad Rama. Rama is Resh Mem Hei, Rabbi Meir Halevi. His own name abbreviated. So he writes, and he's a big fan of the Rambam, in every sense of the word. Like you can see, he follows the Rambam's line of thought as he explains the Gemara Masechet Sanhedrin. But you know, every rule has an exception. So he gets to this particular issue, and he writes on this halacha that the Rambam said that that Lo Adu Rosh is astronomical. He says, "Al tikra Mishne Torah ela Mishane Torah." Don't call it the Mishnah Torah, but Mishane. Mishane means the one who changes Torah. This is a deviation that we can't live with. I mean, that's a very sharp comment. "Al tikra Mishne Torah ela Mishane Torah." But what we do see from source number one is the Rambam attempted to integrate in the Mishnah Torah and in other books the relevant scientific material. So now let's take a look at source number two, what the Gemara says about medical services rendered. In Masechet Baba Kama, based on the whole sugya is the five payments for damages. It's Parshat Mishpatim, person injures another individual. So you have to pay Nezek, Tsar, Ripui, Shevet, and Boshet. Nezek is try to figure out what the damage is worth as a monetary claim. Tsar, how much can you evaluate financially the person's pain? Not so easy. The Gemara talks about that. Ripui is the doctor bills. You know, you had to pay for Mada, for the ambulance, and there was a cost at the terem or at the emergency room. Maybe it had to hospitalize you in orthopedics because the guy broke your leg and you... whatever. It costs money. So that's reput. Shevet means you lost a few days of work. And maybe you don't have insurance on that. Maybe there wasn't Bituch Lumi on this. So you have to pay for unemployment for the days he's out. And then boshet. It's embarrassing. Walk around with a cast or a black eye or whatever. So again, Chazal try to figure out how do you measure these things. You know, two people with the same black eye, one guy, it's not such a bad thing because he happens to be a professional boxer, so he always has a black eye. So he gave him a black eye, it's Nishka Ferlach. The next guy, it says, Hakol v'fiyah mevayesh v'mitbayesh. You have to know who we're talking about. Who's the guy who gave the punch? Who's the guy who received the punch? So the boshet factor, the embarrassment factor, is flexible. So with regard to ripui, the doctor bills, how do you know that you have to pay the medical bills? So the Gemara says, the Tanya says in the Braita, the Bey Rabbi Shmuel Omer, the Yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, in Parshat Mishpatim, it clearly says, V'rapo yirapei, that's one of the obligations. You better make sure that you are responsible for the healing of the individual who you've injured, who you've maimed. Mikan shenitan reshut l'rofei l'rapot. If the Torah says, V'rapo yirapei, that means the doctor has a green light to heal. Now, that's very important because, you know, there's some religions out there that believe that that's not true, right? Christian Science. Right? They believe that if the good Lord wants you to be ill, so you're supposed to be ill. It's went to the United States Federal Supreme Court. Whether against the will of somebody, is this considered a breach of his religious belief and practice? Meanwhile, all he's trying to do is save his life. And this guy says, if God wants me to die, that's it. He wants me to die. What do you want from me? No transfusions, no this, no operation. No. So here the Torah categorically, negates that. It says, but the Rambam apparently doesn't like the word reshut. Reshut means permission granted. Permission granted means, okay, the doctor's not doing an aveira. He's not going against the will of God by intervening. But from where do you see that that means there's an obligation to heal? There's still a little bit of a gap. So the Rambam changes the language a little bit. In the third source, in the Mishnah commentary from Masechet Nedarim, so I'll tell you what the issue is. I know you're not familiar with the fact that sometimes two people can be angry with each other. I know you're not familiar with this. Never happens. Broigus. Sometimes a broigus is such, two neighbors are having a skirmish, and one guy swears, does not want to have anything to do with the other guy. Out of it, boxed out of his life. That person makes such a neder, I don't want to have anything to do with him, right? Finished. He's fine. You made that vow or oath, a neder or shvuah, but basically you boxed the neighbor out of your life. Now, you have a plumbing job, and the guy's a plumber, and you need him desperately. Can you ask him to come in and use his services? The answer is no. Can't do that. You boxed him out of your life. I mean, you could do atarat nedarim, but if the vow is still in force, you got to get yourself another plumber. Or if you're a plumber and the neighbor's pipe burst and he needs you desperately, you can't help him because he's not in your life. He doesn't exist. But the Mishnah says Rufuat HaNefesh is different. Rufuat Nefeshot means if that fellow is sick and you're a doctor, and even though you boxed him out of your life, because, why did you do that? Because of a cardinal sin. He parked his car a little bit too close to the driveway. Efshar lachshov, what ticks people off? Right? Efshar lachshov. And so the Mishnah says, he can help the next guy. He can heal the next person. Why? Because it's a mitzvah to heal. And this is what the Rambam says in source number 3. Refuot nefashot. Hu shirapeoto. That means you yourself will heal him. Refuat memon means if you're a veterinarian and your neighbor's cow is sick, so that means yirapei behemto. That means healing the man's animal. Umutar lo lomar lo mayo il lebemto. He himself is not allowed to administer medical attention, but he's allowed to suggest to the neighbor ideas of what he should be doing so the neighbor doesn't sustain a loss. Lo ne'esar alav ele l'rapotot biado, to heal the animal with his hands if he has to physically intervene, but to suggest to the owner of the animal, his neighbor, who he has boxed out of his life, he's allowed to do. Lo ne'esar zeh l'chole atzmo b'mnei shehu mitzvah. With regard to the neighbor who's ill, there was never a prohibition about healing him. Klomar, and here's the key line: Shechayav harofe min hadin lirapot chole Yisrael. It is an obligation to heal. And from where does the Rambam derive the idea that there's an obligation to heal? So you figure, well, lo tamor adam riecha, which means don't stand idly if, God forbid, somebody's in a precarious situation, right? You'll have to save somebody. V'avdel re'acha kamocha. Also v'yirapo yirape. I mean, you can cite all kinds of psukim. Rambam digs up a good one. Hashavata veda. Hashavata veda means returning lost articles. What's lost here? His health. So you have a mitzvah of restoring his health. And it's interesting that the Rambam says, Lirapot Cholei Yisrael. What's the deal on Hashavat Avita for a non-Jew? So the Torah speaks about L'chol Avedat Achicha. Achicha means your brethren. So technically speaking, the mitzvah of Hashavat Aveda binds two Jews. One lost the article, and the other one found the article. A scenario was created for the opportunity to fulfill the mitzvah of Hashavat Aveda. Well, what happens if you found a lost article that clearly belongs to a non-Jew? There's some identifying features like a name, address, and a phone number. So there's no mitzvah at all. So I remember Rav Lichtenstein Zatzal explained that when Chazal say we should do certain things, b'nei darkei shalom. B'nei darkei shalom means to promote harmony amongst people. And many times Chazal said this with regard to social mitzvot that are non-binding between the Jew and the Gentile world. Like tzedakah, charity, tzedakah. So a Jew is obliged to make sure that the next Jew has enough to eat, enough to clothing to wear, and so on. About a goy, the Torah does not concern itself. It's not that to the Torah, the goy is not important. But as the way Rav Lichtenstein explained it, was that in order to be involved in a framework of a social mitzvah, emphasizing the word mitzvah, both parties must have necessarily stood at Har Sinai to receive the mitzvah. And then the scenario is created. There's the rich and the poor. There's a person who lost the article and a person who found the article. Both were at Sinai, at the Har Sinai. So the mitzvot govern this scenario. The non-Jew wasn't there. So if the non-Jew wasn't there, he's not there to be part of the mitzvah of tzedakah and part of the mitzvah of Shabbat Avida. Nevertheless, Chazal counter and say, in spite of the fact that the non-Jew was not there, there is an overriding concern in the Torah to promote harmony amongst human beings. And that's the way Rav Lichtenstein explained, Mipnei Darkei Shalom. Most people, I can honestly tell you, explain this apologetically. It doesn't look good. It's pasnish. It doesn't look good. You don't give to the goy. So you should give to the goy also. Rav Lichtenstein said it has nothing to do with pasnyo, pasnish. Says there's an obligation of Mipnei Darkei Shalom. And this is something that obligates Am Yisrael to make sure that there is peace and harmony. And the Rambam tells us that even though there's no mitzvah of Hashavat Aveda to the non-Jew, nevertheless, when you do return the article to non-Jew, it's going to bring out a Kiddush Hashem. And you can't get greater than that. The non-Jew is going to say, whew, he didn't even have to do it, but he gave it back to me anyway. And in this context, does a Jewish physician have to stick his neck out and save a non-Jew? The answer is yes. The answer is yes. Even though the Rambam says here, from the point of view of the mitzvah, Chayav Arufei Min Adin L'Rapot Cholei Yisrael, but the Rambam will say elsewhere that a doctor, a physician, is supposed to attend to the needs of all human beings because they were created B'Tzelem Elokim, the image of God. The Rambam professionally served in the house of the Sultan and there he had to attend to the king and his family and the harem and don't ask what. You know, a lot of princes there. And he was very occupied with dealing with non-Jews. And then he writes in a letter, it was an interesting letter, because he had a student in Aleppo, which is Syria, you know, the Halabi Jewish community. And his name was Yosef ben Yehuda ibn Enkin. He's the man who's responsible for the writing of the book, Guide to the Perplexed, Moreh Nevuchim. Because he's sitting there in Syria, and he's writing these letters to the Rambam, I don't get it. You know, you're saying that God doesn't have any figures. What do you do with the pasuk? Vayar Yisrael, Tayar Gdola, Shasa Hashem Mitzrayim. God has Yad Gdola, God has Etz Balokim, God has Charon Af, has anger. How does this jive with the philosophical understanding that the Rambam presents about divinity, about a Kadosh Baruch Hu? So the Rambam goes on to explain it in letters, in envelopes that go back to Aleppo. So he's got this student he's never met. So finally, Rambam gets a letter. I'd like to make a trip to Egypt. Now you have to realize, in the 12th century, This did not mean going through Damascus and boarding a plane and taking it to Cairo, which would take about an hour plus. Not a big deal. That's not what we were talking about. It means making a trip to Tzor or Sidon, on the Lebanese border, and boarding a boat at the ports and taking it to Alexandria, and then travel down south to Cairo, Fostat. It was a trip, but that didn't bother the Rambam. The Rambam says, you're going to go through a whole trouble making the trip. I don't have a minute to even say Shalom Aleichem to you. Because here's my schedule. He writes them. That's where we know the Rambam's daily schedule, where 20 out of 24 hours are used effectively. Used. He sleeps for 4 hours a day. That's it. But 20 out of 24 hours, he's doing something. So he writes that till he gets back from the royal household, it's already mid-afternoon, and he goes to his clinic. The Rambam ran a community Kupat Cholim clinic. And he says, he writes, Jews and Goyim are sitting there and they're waiting. And he begs them, he hadn't eaten breakfast yet, it's 3 p.m. Just a little, you know, timat boker, just to get some food into his system. And then he's busy with the patients, you know, till the nighttime. So when does he have time to learn and write? In the night, nighttime. And I repeat what I said at the beginning of this year, he writes 40 books without secretarial assistance. He doesn't have the Discount Key, Bar Ilan, you know, Project or Shoot. He doesn't have any of that stuff. He's got to have it all here in the head. And it's hard to fathom how one individual was able to be so accomplished. So the Rambam says, Mikan chayav ha'arufei min adin l'rapot chole Yisrael, v'arehu bichlal umram beferush ha'katuv, v'ashevot alo. You have to return it to him. What do you have to return? The lost article. Le rabot et gufo. Even his body. Zot mez, his physical well-being. Shem ra'u oved. If you see it's lost. Be'chol atzilo. And you can restore it. Hareze matzilo be'gufo. O be'mono. O be'yidiyato. Sometimes you can physically help somebody. If you're a chiropractor. Right? Or if you're if perhaps you finance somebody's medical attention. He needs his medical help, but he can't afford it. So you help him out financially, or b'yidiyato, you have knowledge. You know, what's called, you're an eitzageber. You know, you give eitzes. A lot of people give eitzes. I used to say this about the tefillah l'shalom amdina. It says, u'shlach orcha va'amitcha. We ask God to send His guiding light. L'rasheha, sareha, v'yoatzeha. In Ol Nechama, by me, we added one word, nisieha, at the beginning, to the president, because he's our neighbor. Right next door to our shul. So we say, L'nisieha, L'sarasheha, Sareha, V'yoatzeha. Something's missing. What about Toshaveha? What about its residents? The answer is, we already just said Yoatzeha. That includes all the residents of the state of Israel. Because everybody in this country is a Yoetz Memshala, has something to say to the government. So you already, you don't have to have Toshaveha. That would be duplication. So this is a Rambam. Obligation. Now, this obligation shows up in the late 19th and certainly in the 20th century with regard to the shaila of a kohen who wants to study medicine. Because in the days of the Rambam, the person who studied medicine, these were not laboratory coursework, but they were very theoretical. And then by observation of patients, you got the hang of it, of what you should be doing, and so on. So in the late 19th century and certainly 20th century, without the study of pathology, you can't become a doctor. And you have to work on cadavers. Now, how's a kohen going to do that? So there were those who said, if it's chutz laretz and if the cadavers are not Jewish, well, that's a machloket. Whether this tumat meit, with regard to whether b'chlal you're allowed to do the autopsy on non-Jews, Rav Kook and the Rav differed opinions there. On this subject, Rav Kook believed that the Isser, the prohibition of autopsy, was only on Am Yisrael, because he felt that this was a function of the sanctity of Am Yisrael. And that's when they talked about a medical school that they would have at the Hebrew University. The talking already back in 1925, Rav Kook said that it would have to be with non-Jewish bodies and so on. The Rav Zichron of the Bracha had a different take on it, and he said that the prohibition of autopsies does not stem from Kedushat Am Yisrael, but stems from Tzelem Elokim. And Tzelem Elokim, a non-Jew, has as well. So remember, he said that if it's prohibited for a Jew, it's prohibited for a goy. If it's permissible for a goy, it's also permissible for a Jew. And there are certain scenarios where autopsy would be permissible. So this has to be worked out with regard to a kohen in terms of tumat mate. It's not so simple. The Rav used to tell every student who was a kohen, ask permission or guidance to be a doctor, he would say someone else should do it. Because it's not that the world's going to be one doctor less when you have 10 people banging on the doors of medical school for one position to get in. So somebody else is going to be the doctor and not you. Nevertheless, there are those who really felt this is a mitzvah, and the person feels that he or she is cut out for this. With tumat mate, it's not going to be relevant for a woman, bat kohen, but for a male kohen, it is. And they try to find all kinds of ways to get around the problem at the medical school level or at the hospital level afterwards. So I happen to know some kohanim who happen to be doctors, and very, very fine, Yirei Shamayim and Tamidei Chachamim even, and they're physicians. So obviously they worked it out, how they were able to do it. I know the Rav was a big machmer. Back in Germany, in the Hildesheimer Seminar, the Beit Midrash LeRabbanim, Hashem Rav Hildesheimer, the Rosh Hashiva was Rav Dovid Zvi Hoffman, Zichron LeBracha. He was also a Poisek, and Shelot Tshuvot Malamed LeHo'il. And he paskin then, this is the first half of the World War I type era, he paskin that a kohen that studies medicine, there'll be sanctions by the Kehillah. They won't give him the first aliyah, and they won't let him go up for Birkat Kohanim. I mean, real sanctions to prevent a kohen from studying medicine, because the feeling was, this is a kohen who's taking lightly his obligation to protect himself from tumah, from tumat meit. But not all the Rabbanim went along with that. And now in source number 4, in the Mishnah Torah, it's a restatement where the Rambam says, Mutar lo lirapoto biyado shezu mitzvahi. That's already in the Mishnah Torah. And in source number 5, the Kesef Mishnah, that's Rav Yosef Karo, the same Rav Yosef Karo of Shulchan Aruch fame, but he writes a commentary on the Rambam, and I'll just say a word that why he calls the book Kesef Mishnah. The phrase Kesef Mishnah is found in Sefer Breshit, in Parshat Vayigash. V'chesef Mishneh means double the amount of money. The brothers came down to Mitzrayim to see Yosef, and they brought money. And Yosef gives order to the slaves, to his servants there, to put back the money, but double, put back twice the money. Kesef Mishneh means twice the amount of money. So his name is Yosef also, Yosef Karo. So he's looking for something from the world of Yosef HaTzadik. And this book is called Mishneh Torah. Now, Mishneh Torah is a work of art. It's a work of gold. What I'm writing is second fiddle. So it's only Kesef. Silver is second fiddle to gold. So it's a great, great name for his book. You know, that reminds people that he's also a Yosef. But he's writing only the Kesef Mishneh. This is not the Rambam. You know, so in the Kesef Mishneh, he writes that quoting a Yerushalmi in that last line, "Vamrinan Yerushalmi shafilu yeshlo misha rabenu." Even if there's another doctor available, shalom in akol zochel litrap. Oh, this is a very important statement. You've got this neighbor who's broigus and he needs a medical attention, and you're there, you can help him. But next door there's another doctor who has no problems with this neighbor. So let the other doctor take over. Why do you have to? Where's the heter? Where's the permissibility that you're going to do it? Mainly you say there's no other doctors, you are obligated. But if there is another doctor, so Rabbi Yosef Karo quotes a Talmud Yerushalmi, no two doctors are the same. Don't we know that? No two doctors are the same. Forget about bedside manner, which is no small issue, but also in terms of training, in terms of experience, right? The people go to a certain rabbonim and they ask advice. What's his name? Rafira, who even received Pras Yisrael once on Yom HaSmud for his wonderful work. And I'm not questioning his work whatsoever. But my wife has experience with people who went to Rafira concerning where to do cochlear implant operations. First, should do Chutz La'aretz, or if it's in Israel, which of the centers? And which of the doctors, you know, like, so he gives advice. And more often than not, it's simply he happens to know who's the biggest expert in every particular field. That's all. So he's on top of, he's ahead of the game than most people. So he provides a valuable service because he's an informed person. So he will send the person to the most experienced surgeon in a particular scenario. And this is what the Rav Yosef Karo says, Lo min hakol zocheh lehitrapot. Not everybody, when you say zocheh, it doesn't mean in the theological sense, meritorious. It means it doesn't always work with a particular doctor. Because not every doctor has a handle on the situation, is capable in a particular situation. And therefore, even though there may be another physician in the area, if you feel you can help the neighbor, you have an obligation to go and do it. Okay, so that's understanding the Rambam's obligation to heal. And now, source number six. I'm going to have to, we'll do this now, today. It's going to run out of time. And the completion we're going to do in the next year, which is going to be in 2 weeks. Unless anybody wants to hear me say Shurim next week, you'll have to join me in Australia, which I'm leaving tonight. So, I mean, you can have Skype if you want, you know. It works. So, source number six comes from the end of the Rambam's Mishnah commentary from the fourth chapter of Masechet Pesachim. There, the Mishnah tells us that there were six items that the king Chizkiah Melech was a wonderful, one of the few excellent, excellent kings, and I say excellent not in a political sense, in a religious sense. He was the pride of Am Yisrael after David HaMelech. I mean, he restored religious practice and Torah study. It says in the days of Chizkiah, the Ktanim and Ktanot, you know what Ktanim and Ktanot means? Little boys and little girls were experts in the laws of Tumah and Tahara. So Tumah and Tahara is the most intricate areas of Halakha that most people do not have a handle on. And here, look how successful the educational system was in the days of Chizkiah, that the little kids were experts in Tumah and Tahara. This is one of my sources that girls should be studying Halakha at a young age. Right? Ktanim v'ktanot, it says. And let's just mention that now is the 100th anniversary of Sarah Schneer's opening up of the Beit Yaakov in Krakow. I can assure you that the syllabus that she had then doesn't at all look like any Beit Yaakov syllabus today. In various ways. But anyway, she was certainly a pioneer, no doubt. So there, the Mishnah says that three things Chazal applauded what Chizkiah did, and three things Chazal said, not such a good idea what Chizkiah did. We're just going to deal with one of them. That there was a book of medical information, Sefer Rufot, and Chizkiah put it into Geniza, hid it, removed it from the shelves, as we say. And Chazal applauded. They said it was a wonderful thing. Why in the world would Chazal applaud the removal of a book that contains medical data and information? So the Rambam says, I said, you know, usually he tries to be brief in his Mishnah commentary, but here you can see even on the page, which I didn't print the whole thing, it's expansive. He takes a real shot at an explanation that was suggested that the Rambam says this is absolutely wrong. Absolutely wrong. What was the suggestion that was made? That Shlomo Melech wrote a book on medicine. It was a great book, a medical digest, a medical handbook that could be used by laymen and people who had access to the book. And when people were sick, they opened the book and they knew what to do. Okay, so what's wrong with that book? They weren't davening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was left out in the cold. So what did Chizkiah do? He's going to teach Am Yisrael a lesson. No more medical book. And now, you get sick, open up a tillum. Start davening. This is what was suggested. Ganaz Sefer Rufuot Vehodulo. And they agreed, they applauded what Chizkiah did. Now, just take a look at source number 7. And you see that Rashi actually says this. The Ganaz Sefer Rufuot, Rashi says, Kidachtiv, as it says, Vatov Vayashar Benecha Siti, Vamrinan Bibrachot Shagana Sefer Rufuot, mentions in the Gemara, but it's found at the end of Masechet Pesachim. Lefi Shelo Aya Libam Nichna Al Cholim Ela Mitrapim Miyad. The hearts of the sick were not really bent over in prayer, but rather opening up the medical book and figuring out what to do. And therefore comes Chizkia and he's going to teach them a lesson. No more medical book. Now you have to daven. Rashi says this. And some people want to claim that when the Rambam is rejecting categorically this idea that Rashi's saying, is a proof that the Rambam knew Rashi. No proof whatsoever. Not only is no proof whatsoever, but I heard from Rav Professor Chaim Soloveitchik, that's the Rav's son, a great historian and a Talmud Chacham, that the Rambam never heard of Rav Shlomo ben Yitzchak, never heard of him. 100 years after Rashi, not only never heard of Rashi, the Rambam didn't have a clue of what was going on in northern France and in Germany, what we call Ashkenaz, in his own generation. Never a reference at all to any of the communities that the Torah learning of Ashkenaz. The Rambam was keenly aware of southern France, which we call Provence. He had very, very active correspondence with southern France. But northern France? Ephes. Nothing. Nothing whatsoever. And that's 100 years after the Rambam. Rashi, rather. The first time we get a glimpse that North African Jewry, specifically in Egypt, they heard of Rashi. So a manuscript was found many years ago in the Gniza, in the Cairo Gniza, of a Perush on Masechet Baba Batra. A commentary. We don't know who wrote it, because the first three pages and the last three pages were eaten up by the mice. So the book starts on page 5 or page 6, something like that. So we don't know who the author is. But the book was published with annotation and everything. And the editor, the person who put it out, he does us a service and he gives us a whole page of how many times he quotes this person, that person, that person. And you get an idea of who he's being impacted from, who inspired him. So there's no question this is a 13th century work, 100 years after the Rambam. The Rambam is the most cited than anybody else in that sefer. Second is the Rif, Rabbi Yitzchak Alfasi, and that's not a surprise because he predates the Rambam a little bit. And then there are others, at some number. There's one citation from Rabbeinu Shlomo HaTzorfati, Rabbeinu Shlomo from France. That's Rashi. One citation in the entire Masechet of Baba Batra. That's 200 years after Rashi lived, 100 years after the Rambam. Something of Rashi's teaching trickles down to North Africa. You know why? Because they didn't have WhatsApps and they didn't have, telecommunication. They didn't know. They just didn't know. There was blackout. But the view that Rashi does present in source number 7 is a view that was well known. So much so well known that the Rambam felt he had to deliver a knockout blow. So let's take a look what he says. Sefer Rufuot. I'm going back to source number 6. Sefer Rufuot. Haya Sefer Shayabo Seder Rufuot. Bemasha Ein Minadin Litrapotbo. It was a book of medical advice. Don't use this book. The book was not good. Not good at all. Why? Well, he says, Kigon Mashe Medamin Bale Talamasat. These are some type of branches of philosophy. Sheim Osim, such and such, these are Arabic words. Beseidim Misuyam. There were other books out there that were giving, today they call it fake news, but here was fake medical advice. But why was this book written? It was an academic book. It was never ever intended to be a book to be used on a practical level, certainly not as a manual by a layman. It shouldn't derive practical information from it. Zen mutar, that's okay to read a book theoretically. Kamoshi yitbaer lecha, that with regard to books of avodah zarah, you're reading certain theoretical knowledge. It's not an iser. And then I'm jumping two lines. Kasher kilkilu b'nei Adam, but people be degenerated. V'nitrapu bo, but they started using it for active, practical medical procedures. Gunzo. Chizkiah put this book away. He said, this book is dangerous. It's pashut dangerous. And he says, it's possible, says the Rambam. Efshar shaya sefer sheyesh bo harkavat samim. Could be it was pharmacology. It was chemistry and pharmacology. And you know, you have to know the ratio of one element to the other. And you can overdose easily enough on medication that you're not familiar with. Sefer yesh bo harkavat samim hamazikim. Kigon sam ploni, this and such and such medicine. Markivim otokach, mashkim otokach. You put it together, you make them drink it. V'gorem lemachala zu v'zu, v'rapa'oto b'chapakach. This can make you sick, this can make you well. Kishi yira harofe otam hamachalot yada shesam ploni hishkiu v'noten lo dvarim negdiim shiyatzlu. They were antidotes to certain poisons. Tasha kilkilu b'nei adam. People misused this book and people died because of overdoses or lack of knowledge of how the antidotes would work. Gunzo? Now there's both suggestions that the Rambam says what the Sefer Refuot that Chizkiah put away, but these books were dangerous, that's all. And that's why he did it, to save human life. And then the Rambam says in the underline, V'lo he'erachti l'daber b'inyan zeh. I'm apologizing why I'm being so verbose here. I've heard, v'gam pershuli, and people have explained to me, she Shlomo chiber sefer refuot. This is a book that was written, authored by Shlomo HaMelech. Sheim chala adam, somebody was sick, be'ez machala, whatever illness he had. Shu ponei lav, you turn to this book, v'asa kemo shehu omer, umidrape. Just follow the instructions, paint by numbers, and you'll be able to be cured. Look what happened. Chizkiah saw that everybody's just using the book and not using their power of tefillah in their sicknesses. El al sefer refuot, they were relying exclusively on these books of Shlomo HaMelech. Amad v'ganzo, put it away, that's it, no more books. Now you're going to have to daven. You know, you forgot there was a Kadosh Baruch Hu out there, now you have no choice. Now look what the Rambam says about this explanation. And I already told you, Rashi is one of those who holds by this explanation, and many, many others. Umilvat, now, this is going to be very sharp language, the sharpest I've ever seen in any of the Rambam's writings. I mean, he's you know, taken on opposition, positions, that's for sure. Usually in a much kinder way. Here, no kindness whatsoever. Umilvat afasut davarze, afasut from the word ephes. The nonsense, that's the best translation. The nonsense of this. Umash yeshbo minahaziyot. These are just hallucinations. That prewush is hallucinations. Hine yichasu l'chizkiah l'siyato shodulo. You were then assigned to Chizkiah, and the Chachamim who even applauded it, sichlut she'ein liyaches dugmata. Idiocy, that there's no incomparable idiocy. Ela leguim shebahamon, that you might assign to the lowest of the low amongst the masses. Ulefi dimyonam hameshubash vametupash, and according to their ridiculous, mixed up, and idiotic imagination, I'm going to give you the following scenario. If somebody was hungry, imra'ev adam, upana lelechem, and he ate the bread, v'achlo, and he ate the bread, shemitrape meoto atzar agadol b'li safek, certainly you're going to cure the hunger pangs that you've had. Hayim nomar sheisir bitchonom Hashem. Did that mean that he lost confidence in God? Have shotim yomar lahem. Only idiots would say this. Ki kemo shani modeh atzar Hashem be'et ha'ochel. I'm sorry. Ki kemo shani modeh Hashem be'et ha'ochel shem tzili davar lahasir avoni ulachitani ulekameini. Just as I thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu at the time that I eat, that is before and after, to cure me, to remove the pang of hunger, and to sustain me, Kach nodelo al shehimtzi refua hamerapa et machlati kisheshtamesh ba. So too I am obliged to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the wonderful team of research scientists who've developed medical procedures, who've come up with unbelievable medication that will assist me and alleviate my pain. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of course, has to be in the picture. But don't forget the doctors. They have to be in the picture also. You can't have it one without the other. And the suggestion that the Rambam is negating, that we happen to know happens to be Rashi's opinion, the Rambam goes out on a limb to negate totally. Lo hayiti tzarich listor perush zeh, and I did not find it necessary to contradict that perush, hagarua, which was terrible, lulei pirsumo. But what can I do? It became famous, became popular. So that's why I had no choice, but I really had to come out punching. This is the strongest I've ever seen the Rambam take aim at a particular view that he was so diametrically against. Last week when we spoke about hatpalat mayim, desalinization of water, as one of the great developments of Medinat Yisrael. We didn't invent desalinization water. What we did was we improved desalinization to making it economically available, both for us here in Israel and now selling the technology to the world, which brings in money to Israel as well. And although, Baruch Hashem, we daven for rain, and this weekend is going to be chorpi, it's going to be wintry, and by us, wintry means a great day. It's going to be a great day when it rains. So that means we have to thank Kadosh Baruch Hu that the Kadosh Baruch Hu gave human beings the wisdom to be able to have filtration systems from the salt water of the ocean and the Mediterranean Sea and make it converted into drinking water and water that's appropriate for irrigation of fields and so on. Human beings are in the service of God or partnering with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, no doubt. And this is what the Rambam is saying. Whether it's in the area of food, whether it's the area of medication, the Rambam believes absolutely there's a human element that must necessarily be part of this. And that's why the Rambam very much spends time in practice. I mean, he's a Yafed Doresh V'Yafed Mekayem. I mean, here's a man who knows the art of healing and does it for a living. Now, just to be fair, the Rambam did not start out as a doctor. He didn't have ambitions that he's going to be a physician. But the knowledge of medicine was important to him, no less than the knowledge of astronomy and botany and engineering and everything else that he has in his works, because that complements the understanding of Torah. But he received a stipend from his older brother. He had an older brother who was very wealthy, an international merchant, and the older brother's ship went down in the Indian Ocean with all his wares from India, and the Rambam slips into clinical depression for a year. According to his own writings, couldn't get out of bed for a year. I mean, he was just shot. And the community in Old Cairo, they wanted to support him, and the Rambam says he is not going to allow the Jewish community to support him because it's going to look bad, because the Rambam believed that B'nai Torah should not receive stipends, but they should work. He says it, and that's when he sees a job offer in the papers, looking for a physician at the Sultan's palace, and he gets the job. In 2 weeks, we're going to see something that he writes to the son of the Sultan in terms of a diet that has to do with pork meat, which he thinks is a very, very good nutritional additive to the fellow's diet, knowing fully well that the same Rambam in Moreh Nevuchim claimed that all of the ma'achalot asurim, those foods that are forbidden by the Torah, are by definition not healthy. So if they're not healthy, so are they just not healthy for Jews, but for Goyim it is healthy? We're going to have to deal with that. It's going to appear on the page of sources 17 and 18, from Pirkei Moshe. So just leave the pages in the back. B'li Neida, I'll bring the pages in 2 weeks' time. There is a shiur next week by, they didn't tell me who, but So we dealt with the Rapa at the beginning of the year. If you look at source number two, so if you Rapo Yerape, Rashi would understand that there's a heter. There's a heter for giving medical attention, but not necessarily an obligation. It's a big difference. The Rambam was the one who went on a limb and said it was obligation. But others just accepted the notion, Rapo Yerape, that there's a permissibility. It's not an avera to offer medical attention. That's all.